Big show for you here today. It is the Week 17 Fantasy Football Preview. Fantasy Championship Weekend. Justin Boone joins me to preview everything that you need to know for the Sunday games. Tons of stuff to get into here. It's the six-pack of questions. Amarian Hampton potentially undervalued. Juwan Johnson potentially undervalued. We've got sleepers. We've got players we're concerned about. We've got wide receivers in good spots. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Justin Boone, or perhaps the Grinch himself. Grinch, Boone, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening, Mr. Harmon? I think I did this in the wrong order, though, because yesterday we were like a little more bitter about some of the results from Sunday, and maybe the Grinch would have made more sense for yesterday's show, but instead I'm going full Grinch for what is technically our holiday episode here. But good to chat with you. Good to get some use out of this Grinch costume that I actually got a few years ago. My parents had a Grinch themed Christmas party, and I showed up in full Grinch attire, and since then it's been sitting in my closet. So it's good that this week I've busted it out a couple times here and we've gotten to use it. But how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Yeah, for the audio listeners, you are missing out big time here on Justin Boone and what was a full Grinch Santa costume. Now he's taken the Grinch mask off. It's worth going to our YouTube channel, Yahoo Fantasy on YouTube, just to check this out, to see him in the full Grinch mask. And now he's just regular old Santa Claus. You're right. You did kind of do that in reverse order, but I think that works out. You're much more committed to the bit than me. I am wearing a Nakatomi Plaza Christmas party, nice. whatever the year was. What is the year here? 1988 Christmas party, Die Hard reference there. So I am making a big political statement about whether Die Hard is or is not a Christmas movie, but I'll let that speak for itself here. You're much more committed to the holiday bit than I am. Speaking of the holiday bit, I do just want to be transparent off the top here. We are pre-filming, pre-recording this episode a day early so that we did not have to do a show at 5 p.m. on Christmas Eve, so that Justin Boone and I could not get divorced this holiday season. Nobody's really looking forward to that. So wishing you all out there a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays, all of those good things. Hopefully you are enjoying some good family time as you also, Boone, as the people bring home some fantasy championships this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's all about, right? That's why we started this at the beginning of the season, all summer long, giving advice. And I'm going to reference some things that we actually talked about going back to the very first weekly preview show we did before week one that I think are coming back around full circle and could actually put quite a nice little bow on the fantasy season this week. So it'll be interesting. We've got a bunch of stuff to discuss today.
Oh, man, holiday season, you know, we're looking back to the beginning of the year. There might be like a flicker of emotion in my cold, dark heart today. What do you know? How about that? There's the Christmas miracle for the people out there. All right, let's get into it here. As usual, we'll follow sort of our traditional structure of this show here with a little bit of a twist. The first two segments are going to be Boone's six-pack of questions. That will be standard. Segment three, a little bit different here. It's going to be a fantasy film room segment. I'm going to take you through three wide receivers who I really like this week for several different reasons. We will get into all of that. And then segment number four, it is the hurry up offense. As usual, rapid fire questions to finish this thing off. So with that, let's dive into Boone's six pack of questions. All right, Boone, we popped the top here for the holiday season. Let's get into it. What is the first question of the week?
So this is the one I was referencing. Will our preseason takes about the Bears and the 49ers offenses, will they finally matter most here in the fantasy championships? And these are two teams that are, of course, playing each other on Sunday Night Football. Very healthy 51.5 projected point total in this game. That's the second highest on the slate. And this means that you probably are going to want to have some pieces going in this contest for fantasy. And if we go back to that week one preview episode, the very first six-pack question that I posed, Harmon, was, are people forgetting how good the 49ers offense can be? And most of this year, I mean, they've dealt with a ton of injuries. Ricky Pearsall has missed 7 games. He's going to miss more with the knee injury. We're not going to have him back for the fantasy championships. Juwan Jennings, he missed a couple games early in the year. Brock Purdy missed 8 games in the first half of the season. George Kittle missed 5 early. Now he's dealing with an ankle injury. That's potentially going to put his week 17 availability in doubt. The only guy that hasn't gotten hurt is Christian McCaffrey, which, I mean, is hilarious in its own right. And is like the last guy that you would have predicted from this group. But I love that the joke all year long that he's sort of siphoning the energy from everyone else to keep him going. Maybe there's some truth to that here. But amidst all the injuries, the 49ers, 11-4. They're top 5 in passing yards. They're top 5 in passing TDs. Brock Purdy, QB5 in fantasy points per game this year, even though he missed all that time. And then when he first came back, had a couple down games in his first 3 games when he returned. CMC, the RB1 in fantasy points per game. Kittle, the tight end 2. Juwan Jennings, wide receiver 37 on the season, but he is just on fire lately. 7 touchdowns in his last 7 games. Purdy's been a top 4 fantasy QB in back-to-back games here. CMC was top 3 in week 16 among running backs. Kittle, the tight end 6 in week 15. The tight end 1 in week 16. It's unfortunate that he's dealing with this ankle injury now, but that doesn't really stop this offense from potentially being dominant. And, you know, I don't mean to sound overly negative about the Kittle injury. Like you said, we're recording this early in the week. We don't have all the injury information that we normally would have for the preview show. So hopefully he will be fine. Hopefully he'll play Sunday night. But regardless, this offense is just so dangerous. They're crushing it from a fantasy football perspective right now. And then on the other side of the field, if we go back to the week 1 preview show, we talked about Ben Johnson and the Bears and how maybe they could start off slow. But as the season went on, this had the makings of being a really potent offense. And that's exactly what we've seen, right? They've also dealt with injuries, especially the receiving core lately. Roma Dunze sidelined with the foot injury. Luther Burden dealing with the groin issue. And yet other guys have stepped up. DJ Moore kind of getting back into the mix here. Caleb Williams, he has shown great strides this season. I mean, he still makes some mistakes, right? He definitely does, but he's been a lot more composed in the pocket this year. He's taken fewer sacks. He makes them just like mind-bending throws sometimes. That's one of the reasons why they went out to get him, right? Because he can make these spectacular plays. Now he gets to face this 49ers defense. They're on a short week after playing Monday night. They just gave up 277 yards and 2 TDs to a 44-year-old Phillip Rivers. I think Caleb is definitely in play as a QB1 for week 17. DJ Moore as a top 7 fantasy wide receiver the last 2 weeks. He's somebody you can get in your lineup regardless of the injury situations with those other guys. Colston Loveland, the tight end 7 in fantasy points per game since the week 9 bye. DeAndre Swift, the RB16 on the year. Kyle Manunga, always a threat to score a touchdown. So I think this game is really going to matter this week. I'm glad that we talked about them the way that we did back in week 1. Because I really think this game on Sunday night is going to be a big one for the fantasy championship. So we're going to see a lot of points and a lot of players coming through and help people win titles this week.
First of all, shout out to you for remembering what we talked about on the week 1 preview show. I
might have had to go back and look at it a little bit. It wasn't just off the top of my dome here. But yeah, it was nice that when I went back, I was like, oh, man, that works perfectly.
Regardless, it's still shout out to you for that. I wouldn't have even had the thought to be like, I wonder what we said back in week 1. That's ancient history to me. I've moved on. I live in the present here. Let's start on the Bears side of things, because just talked about the 49ers, you know, pretty recently here. I want to talk about this Bears offense. And I love the way you framed Caleb Williams as a quarterback right now. You know, he's not perfect. There's no question about that. But in this whole like national discourse that we're having about, you know, young quarterbacks in relation to Phillip Rivers coming back and how mentally far ahead Phillip Rivers is as a quarterback in terms of the operation and the pre-snap and everything like that. You know, it is just a reminder that these young quarterbacks they're still developing pictures, right? They're that slow developing Polaroid type of guys here, to use a Scott Pianowski term. And for Caleb Williams, though, it's certainly like the picture is not fully developed, but man, I feel really good about what we've seen so far this year for a variety of different reasons. He just has really cut back on mistakes. Like, he misses throws, and I think that's the one thing you can still say, you know, might keep you up at night if you're a Bears fan, if you're worried about him becoming a top five quarterback in the NFL. Like, he does have to clean those things up. No, we're talking about him avoiding mistakes. We're talking about him avoiding sacks. We're talking about him, I think, making good decisions in terms of, okay, pre-snap, this is my look. This is where the ball needs to go. I generally think he gets to the right choices within the play. It's just sometimes the throw isn't accurate, and maybe that improves and maybe it doesn't, but that is leaps and bounds where he was at this point, you know, freaking Christmas of last year. It's so far ahead to the point that, Boone, I know it's a depleted supporting cast, right? Like, we might not, where I think there's very little chance Adunze plays in this game. Ben Johnson said today that he is on track, and what he meant by that is that he is going to help us again this year. You know, I don't know if he means this calendar year or this season, but we're obviously running out of days on the calendar here for him to help us. I would imagine it means this season. So I don't think he's going to play this week. Maybe Burden does, but even still, like, I do have faith that Caleb Williams, in a good matchup against a 49ers defense that plays hard but just lacks that, you know, superstar level talent, I think he can come through in this matchup here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a testament to him that they've continued to put up points and have success here, even though they have had these injuries in the receiving core. And it makes the organization look really smart for spending these early draft picks to get guys like Burden and Loveland and kind of give them a little more insulation that if injuries happen, it wasn't just like one receiver. We've seen other teams, right? You think about the Atlanta Falcons, who we'll talk about in a second here, but you think about them and Drake London at the top of that receiving core. True. And then Drake London goes out, and yeah, Kyle Pitts has had like this resurgence, but they don't have a lot on the depth chart. Darnell Mooney having a pretty bad season here, but the Bears, they have these other guys that can step up, and a lot of them are young, like DJ Moore showing he can still get it done. But some of these other guys like Colston Loveland and Burden, when he's healthy, there's a lot more for those guys to unlock in their careers, whether that's the rest of this season or whether that's in future years. And I think they've looked really, really good. So I also don't know if Burden's going to play in this game. He didn't practice last week. I have serious doubts that Adunze, after aggravating the injury when he was trying to come back really quick from it, normally when you aggravate it, that costs you even more time than the original injury. So I have some serious doubts that he's going to play this week. Burden, we'll see if he can get out to practice or not. If he plays, he's somebody you could consider putting in your fantasy lineup because he has been decent when he's been out there recently, especially with Adunze out of the lineup. But yeah, this Bears offense is very, very exciting right now, and we're only still scratching the surface on what they can all do together under Ben Johnson. And I think it's interesting to see Caleb Williams. We all know he didn't have fond thoughts of his previous coaching staff last year, but him just saying like they have the best coaching staff in the world, that's how they feel about these guys. And Ben Johnson answering the call, right? Because we thought he was going to be a good head coach. When you're a good coordinator, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to translate to being a good head coach. And I think he has just answered it in every way this year, that he has this team already competitive and they're going in the right direction. And for fantasy, this is a team you're going to want to be a part of, not just in week 17, but in many years to come, I think.
Oh, I can't wait to draft so many pieces from this team in 2026. I might overdo it. It's very possible I get overexcited about this Bears team, because even as you're talking, man, you know, I'm not a Bears fan at all, but I know a lot of Bears fans. I'm friends with a lot of Bears fans. And it's just, I'd be so jacked up by everything you just said there, because I couldn't agree more with like the fact that Caleb is so bought in, the fact that this coaching staff is so bought in, the fact that this team is going to the playoffs, and the passing game, which was a big part of what made the Lions so good under Ben Johnson, was just how clean the passing game felt once it hit its ceiling. The fact that we haven't even seen that happen yet and this team is going to the playoffs, I'd feel so, so good if I was a Bears fan. I don't think this is one of those, you know, random first year blips for a head coach. One more point before we move off of this Bears team, and this is more of a, you know, kind of more of a meta point. And we'll be doing a lot once we get to the NFL playoffs. We'll be doing kind of a lot of like retrospective stuff, looking back, lessons learned, all of that type of thing here, because we'll still be doing, spoiler alert, 3 shows a week during the NFL playoffs. So buckle up, Boone. We're not totally ready to let you wander off into the wilderness just yet, but I know at some point you'll be taking some well-deserved time off. Just one thought that I had as you were saying that, it's such a good point about how juxtaposing the Falcons versus this Bears team. And I know this is frustrating in fantasy, Even think about the Arizona Cardinals. They were another team that added nothing to their skill position group in the offseason. And I remember even saying at the time, like, is that a good idea? And look, like, Michael Wilson has obviously had a fantastic season. Trey McBride is having one of the best tight end seasons ever, despite what he did in week 16. And yeah, Michael Wilson's been like a revelation when Harrison has gotten hurt. But their depth, I think, has been a problem, even if it's been a fantasy gold mine. The fact that those two teams or the two guys just eat all the targets. Guess what? The offense still stinks. The team still loses. You know, and I think for the Bears, my point in all of this is that yes, is it like a fantasy frustration when things are too crowded? I kind of think we're going to have to get used to this more and more because there's just so much talent at wide receiver. You know, when you can get like dynamic tight ends and running backs involved, and I think there's more and more teams going to these heavier personnel packages, so that takes receivers off the field. It increases the rushing volume. I had a moment a couple of weeks ago where, you know, you're thinking about doing this as a job and stuff and just how silly it feels sometimes, because all it really matters is, like, on a weekly basis, who are you playing? Like, are you in a good matchup? Are you in one of those spots where you can put up big numbers and then everybody's talking about you? And then, you know, then the player has like a down game because they played a good defense or they weren't in a good spot or whatever. And that just, like, is how the narrative goes. And even more than that, it's just like, who else is on your team? You know, like guys can be great players and they just don't get the football relative to like what other players get because of who else is on their depth chart. So I don't know. That's like a little bit too nihilistic for Christmas, but it's just sometimes how I feel about this whole thing. So I don't know if I made a salient point there, but it's something that I want to unpack more and more. And I think this Bears team just really kind of crystallizes that.
Yeah, it's something that I especially think about when the rookie class comes in after the draft and you see where guys land and the different, you know, depth charts that they fall onto. And I think that's really important because some organizations are better than others. And if a talented prospect goes to a certain team, you kind of already know, like, oh no, he's going to be behind the eight ball trying to be successful on that offense. Or it could be a crowded depth chart, like you're saying, and there could be really talented players. How many times have we seen that recently? A guy like JSN, right, goes on to a team where you have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and maybe some questionable coaching as well in that season. But still, we don't see his full potential until a year or two later when he breaks out, and now he looks like one of the best receivers in the league. So things can change, especially with young players. They can get better over time, and I think we're going to see that in this Bears offense, whether it's Caleb Williams or Loveland or Burden. There are so many players in this offense that I think are going to get better over time because this looks like it's going to be one of the good organizations where you want to see players land, where they're going to get good coaching and they're going to develop properly. And it's just been a really exciting thing to watch for fantasy this year. The only other thing I want to bring up before we move on here on this game, because I kind of touched on it, the Kittle injury. If he is out in this contest, it puts Jake Donges back on the streaming radar. If you remember, when Kittle was sidelined from week 2 to week 6, he was the tight end 12 in fantasy points per game during that span. He scored a couple touchdowns. He did a decent job. So hopefully you have another option you could look to. I don't know that you want to feel good about putting him in your lineup this week if Kittle's out, but he is a potential streamer in deeper leagues if Kittle can't play in this game.
Yeah, tight end gets pretty messy pretty quick this week. So, you know, you probably have a better option than Jake Donges, but it's certainly one to throw out there. And, you know, to my point about like who else are you on offense with, who else is on your team, if there's no George Kittle, that really just launches Juwan Jennings up to even more of a must start territory and what is generally a plus matchup here. I think this is going to be a really interesting game, and we'll talk more, spoiler alert, about DJ Moore later on, especially as it relates to that question of is anything really happening here, or is it just who are you playing with in your receiver room and how that kind of projects you from a week to week basis. So we'll come back to that point later on. I really am looking forward to seeing this 49ers and Bears team, and I'm glad it's sort of a full circle moment back to our week one conversation. Let's move on to the second point this week and stick in the NFC West.
All right. So we're going to talk about the Falcons a little bit. Like I mentioned, I want to know which pass catchers other than Puka Nacua can we trust in this Rams-Falcons game on Monday night? And we always talk about having that Monday night hammer for fantasy matchups and getting that hope until late in the week when you could potentially come back or, you know, finish off strong and win a matchup. And we just saw it happen in like a major way on Monday night, right? We saw tons of points between the 49ers and the Colts in that game, a combined 75 points in that one. So I'm sure that people are going to be looking at Monday night next week and going, man, that would feel pretty good if I could play some players in that game. Puka's the obvious one. I mean, the game has a decent total at 49.5, so Vegas is definitely expecting some scoring here. Obviously, the running backs on both sides are in play. You're going to look to play them in this one. Stafford, a must start at this point. But which pass catchers, other than Puka, can we really have some faith in here? Because Devontae Adams, he's turning 33 this week. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. I'm not sure that 1 week is going to be enough for him to come back here. So I worry that he's not going to be able to play in this game. We're going to have to monitor that, but it's not sounding good. And in his absence last week, I mean, it feels like a lifetime ago because they played on Thursday last week. It's weird to go from Thursday night football to Monday night football, right? They have a ton of time to prepare for this game, the Rams do. But in that Thursday night game, Kanata Mumfeld played the second most snaps, ran the second most routes among the Rams receivers. He had 8 targets in that game. He only came away with 3 catches for 40 yards. Xavier Smith was 3rd in the wide receiver room. He finished with 2 for 57. And then the tight ends, they were really a huge part of things. They did a lot to kind of fill in that void with Adams out, but it was really spread out amongst all three of them between Colby Parkinson and Terrence Ferguson and Davis Allen. Ferguson going 3 for 33 in a touchdown. Parkinson, the very disappointing game because people were on him. We thought he'd be able to come through, maybe find the end zone in this one, just 2 for 21. And Davis Allen led the way in yardage among that group, barely, but with 34 yards. So bottom line, I mean, the production kind of spread out amongst everyone behind Puka for the Rams. So I don't know if you feel strongly about somebody there. And then on the Falcons side, Drake London returning. He sees 8 targets in that game. Doesn't really seem like the London that we're used to production-wise, right? Just 3 for 27 when it's all said and done. And that was the highest total for any Falcons receiver last week. Bijan Robinson, he had a good day through the air. He was kind of their number one receiver, 92 yards and a score. Kyle Pitts, another good game, 7 for 57 and 1. But again, this game, 49.5 points, the projected total is set at right now. So, Harmon, the question is, like, are you actually going to consider playing any of the pass catchers aside from Puka in this one? And I include Pitts as somebody that I'm not totally sure about, because if Drake London starts to show some signs that he's healthier and take on his normal role, I think that puts Kyle Pitts in more of a risky territory for fantasy. So is there anybody pass catcher wise in this game other than Puka that you're willing to actually start in the fantasy championships?
I think on the Rams side, it's a pretty hard no from me. This feels like a game where Puka Nacua helps bring you home a title all on his own. He's fantastic at everything at this point. You know, regardless of coverage, the Falcons do play a lot of single high looks. So that would be a moment where you're hoping that perimeter X receiver is able to have a big time moment against this team. That's typically the type of, you know, archetype of wide receiver you'd look to against this type of defense. But it's pretty much Puka Nacua on passing snaps. He ran 67% of his snaps out wide on passing plays last week. You know, they really don't have anybody else who's operating as a full-time guy outside. But Kanata Mumfeld, I'm glad you brought him up. There's like a little something to him. You know, he was the number 2 wide receiver in this game, but he only ran a route on 53% of the dropback. So he's not a full-time guy, but, and I think obviously if you're playing Kanata Mumfeld, that's way too thin in fantasy, but definitely a player to monitor here.
Harmon, well, I've talked about before, I'm in some of these deep dynasty leagues, and I'm in a league where I start 5 receivers, and you don't have much on your bench to go to after that, and DK Metcalf got himself suspended this week, so I believe Kanata Mumfeld is in the running for me, because there's nothing on the waiver wire. I don't have much on my bench. He might be in that 5th receiver spot on that team. So there are some people out there who might have to start him this weekend. I might be like one of them. Yeah.
That's incredible. I think if I was still alive in the Kings Classic League, which is one of these disgusting, you start 3 wide receivers, 3 flex, you know, full PPR, I might have considered Mumfeld. Honestly, he's probably rostered. Probably not even available in that league, so what am I talking about? But I did lose last week. I blew it on the AJ Barner versus Dawson Knox decision at tight end. I blew it on that one, and that was what ended up costing me. But anyways, no one cares about my fantasy teams. I might have considered him in that situation too, because like I said, I think he's in a pretty good spot as a perimeter player that, like I said, showing a little something to him, but definitely a deeper play here. I think on the Falcons side of things, interesting that since week 11, the Los Angeles Rams give up 125.5 yards per game to receivers lined up out wide. That is fifth most in that time span. They give up 38.3 yards per game to receivers lined up in the slot. That is 31st in that time span. And I think so, pretty big split there. And if you're looking at the Falcons last week, obviously we've talked about this a lot, that the reason that Kyle Pitts has, you know, had this resurgence here is because he's lined up more in the slot with Drake London out. Last week, it was 38% snaps in the slot on passing plays for Kyle Pitts. It was 40% of snaps on passing plays in the slot for Drake London. So they are kind of splitting that work in the slot. But obviously, London is going to see a lot more snaps out wide and is probably going to get into some more of those favorable coverage looks there. So I do think that I've kind of, you know, maybe I'm saying this because I would like to have Drake London as that Monday night hammer, but I kind of feel a little bit better about London right now than maybe I did yesterday when we talked about this on the Trust Meter show.
I really hope you're right, because we saw him get off to a good start this year, and it really seemed like all those preseason projections that we had for him could come true with the amount of volume that he was getting in this offense. We know he's a talented player. It sucks whenever injuries kind of derail a guy's season. I worry that's the case here, though. Like, coming back from the PCL, I'm not sure that the second week is going to be enough time for him to get back to being that guy yet, but my fingers are crossed. I really want to see him perform in this one.
7 of 8 targets were when he was lined up out wide last week as well. So I do think if you're looking for a reason to talk yourself into Drake London, you know, we've seen guys like Jalen Coker have big plays. They're primary slot players, but they line up outside and they get that one big route against this Rams defense. Obviously, JSN had a couple of big plays lined up out wide last week too. So definitely something that I think we could see there. Okay, let's get to the third question here for this week.
We talked a little bit about Josh Allen yesterday, but I'm curious, is Eagles-Bills going to be a problem for fantasy managers? And there's a few different reasons why it might be a problem. Some of the things we discussed yesterday when we talked about Josh Allen having, you know, his worst fantasy day in 6 years in the fantasy semifinals. Clearly, I'm still not over it. You know, it's fine. I did have two Josh Allen teams advance to the finals, so I guess I can hang my hat on that it wasn't just a complete zero and they all went out last week. But if we look at week 17 here, it's another tough matchup for the Bills, and it's also a tough matchup for most of the Eagles, to be fair. And if we walk through it, I mean, the reports are that Jalen Carter and Lane Johnson are expected back for Philly, which is absolutely massive for both sides of the ball if that actually happens. It's arguably their best two players potentially returning to the lineup. For the Eagles offense, we've discussed before the splits when Lane Johnson's out there versus when he's not, the huge difference in efficiency and productivity, all that sort of stuff. So for their sake, hopefully he plays. The Bills are a tough matchup for basically every fantasy position other than running back, though. So you wonder, could this be a big Saquon game? A Buffalo, the fifth toughest against quarterbacks, the ninth toughest against receivers, the second toughest versus tight ends. But they allow the fifth most fantasy points to running backs. This has been a defense that we've targeted. We've tried to get our backs playing against them for fantasy. And Barkley's been getting hot at the right time here. At least 90 scrimmage yards and a touchdown in 3 straight games. So really, really like him this week. Jalen Hurts, I have him more down in like the mid-range QB1 area for this matchup, because the matchup is tough. The game also has a very low projected point total at 43.5. And part of that, I alluded to it a little bit yesterday, it might be because of the weather. And normally, I don't really factor the weather in too much into my projections, into my rankings, until later in the week when you get a couple days out from the game, because we know forecasts can change quite a bit. But we're also talking about Buffalo, and we're talking about late December. And right now, the forecast is calling for rain turning into snow in the afternoon, winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, higher gusts as well. Both quarterbacks can run. I think things could get ugly here, though. So the fact that they can run might still make them come through for fantasy. For Allen and the Bills side, I mean, the Eagles are bottom 6 in fantasy points allowed to QBs, wide receivers, tight ends. They give up the 10th most fantasy points to running backs. Those numbers skewed a little bit by the fact that Jalen Carter has missed some games. And normally when he misses games, the other team's running back tends to perform a lot better. If he's back for this one, then it becomes a little bit tougher of a matchup for James Cook. I'm not really saying like bench all your players in this game. Like, you know, we're not going to make those decisions until later in the week, and you're likely not going to sit Allen or Hurts, though I do have them ranked a little bit lower than most weeks. Same with AJ Brown. He'll be a guy that probably moves down a little bit in my next update. But players like Dalton Kincaid, like Khalil Shakir, like Dallas Goedert, some of those like more fringe fantasy starters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at the matchups. I look at the weather. And I would definitely think twice about having those guys in my lineups. And even, like I said, some of the superstar players in this game, I think the projections are just going to be a little bit lower than usual. So if people are looking at my early rankings this week, don't be surprised if you see some of those names just a little bit further down. Right now, I still have Allen at QB4. I have Hurts at QB6, but they might fall a little bit more if that weather report actually holds.
No, I think this is a really good point because almost regardless of the weather, I feel like this could be just kind of, despite the fact these two teams are very good, they're both going to the playoffs, you know, the whole deal. I feel like this could be kind of an ugly football game, you know, with just the way, like, Eagles games can definitely get ugly. And you'd think, like, hey, this is a time to, we've had some good rushing performances lately. Saquon has had some good games. Let's continue to build that up. Like, just try to run the football against this Bills run defense, especially if Lane Johnson is back. Don't try to put the football too much in the air. And, you know, we'll talk about the coverage matchup a little bit later on. But typically, this is the type of defense that Jalen Hurts has some of his worst performances against in terms of what the Bills like to do on the back end. It's not usually the typical Eagles, we smoke man coverage left and right type of matchup. We'll talk about that a little bit later, expand more on that point. But that's sort of something I think working in the ugliness of it. And just like the way the Bills are right now, they kind of have to win ugly because, you know, Josh Allen can, of course, put the Superman cape on and go crazy. And you can't bench Josh Allen because he could conceivably run the football in three times on his own in this game. But in terms of throwing the football in the air, I think this looks like a pretty tough spot here. It's a good secondary. We know that. Well, they have a great cornerback and another a great nickel cornerback. They have one spot that you can pick on, the second outside corner. Who are they picking on that guy with? You know, Tyrell Shavers? I don't know about that. So it just looks like an ugly football game anyways.
Yeah, and Vegas is shining the light on the fact that this might be a lower scoring game than people would normally expect from these two teams, considering how many great players they have, because like I said, 43.5, that is not the projected point total that you would think you would get from a game between the Eagles and the Bills, all things considered. But I do think the weather is factoring in there, on top of the fact that the ways that these teams win, the other teams match up pretty well against them. So yeah, I think this one could be really ugly, and it's unfortunate. And maybe I'm a little burnt by the fact that Josh Allen had the bad game last week, and you look at it now, I'm starting to try to talk myself into potentially not even playing him this week. I'm not going to get there. He's still going to be in my lineups.
Yeah.
But this is one where I just don't think we should expect ceiling performances from most of these guys in this contest.
I think that's the right way to view it. I don't think we're saying bench any of the superstar players. Maybe, you know, kind of lower expectations for some of the Eagles wide receivers. But it's really just make some lineup decisions based on the fringy type guys. But you're not going to bench Saquon. You're not going to bench James Cook. I couldn't live with myself if I benched Josh. I'd rather take another 6.9 performance with Josh Allen than put him on my bench and he goes nuclear for one of his 40 spots. That's just me personally. But yeah, definitely, I this is a really good call out by you, because the more I've looked at it, the more I think this is going to be one of those ugly type of football games. All right, we are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we've got more questions coming up, especially some from you listeners out there. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to roll through questions here, heading into week 17, your fantasy football championships. Boone, what is our next question here?
So as always, I put out the call for questions. We've been doing that the last few weeks, getting the listeners to chime in and give some of their thoughts that we could potentially discuss on the show. We got a good amount of questions, but let's face it, like when you get to championship week, it's mostly people concerned with their lineups, with start sit stuff, a lot of photos of lineups, right? Late, rate my lineup. Would you make any changes? That sort of stuff. Not really things we can discuss on the show, not really general things that apply to a big audience. So didn't get many questions that I thought would work for the show this week. We did get a couple fun ones that we're going to use here, including this one we're going to throw in as a bonus. This is not part of the six pack. This is just a fun one here. I'm curious your answer. @_ Armstrong Joel, playing off the DK Metcalf situation, they want to know, who's more likely to punch a fan, Boone or Harmon? Who do you think, man? I'm going to let you answer first.
I'm very torn on this. I think that neither one of us really are hotheads, honestly. That's the thing. You're super nice. Although here's my thinking about wanting to say it's you. If I was to argue that it would be you, play devil's advocate here. You're super nice, but you're also way more competitive than me. And I don't know, that is, I think, just facts. I'm not a very competitive person. You've admitted this, that you're a very competitive person. If anybody has followed the rankings contest saga, they know you're a very competitive person. And I feel like because of that, I don't know how susceptible you are. I don't know if you're susceptible enough to you know, pull on a DK Metcalf and, you know, assaulting a fan. But I do wonder if you could be, you know, somebody could get in your head a little bit in that way.
So it depends what you mean by get in my head. I also think I'm probably the answer. I think you're very nice as well. I think people look at me and the Canadian background and they think, okay, he's just really, really nice. We're both good guys. I think for me, I was a little maybe more of a hothead, especially when it came to sports when I was younger. That's kind of out of me now, a lot more mature, take a lot to get me there. I think the key would be if someone that I knew was in a bad situation, I'm very loyal. I would be very quick to step up for a friend or a family member. Or if I saw someone like doing something really wrong to somebody that I didn't know, I would still be willing to step in and do something about that. I think those are scenarios where I would probably be able to be kind of goaded into potentially doing it. So I would also say me. I didn't know if you would, but yeah, I do think I am the answer to that one.
Real men don't start fights. Okay. All right. Real men protect people. That's the whole deal. You're not out there starting a bar fight like a hothead. You're not grabbing fans out of the stand. Come on. That's not real man stuff. Let's be super clear about that. The producers are weighing in our chat. JB says Harmon 100% with several percentages. Producer Colin said, I am more likely to do it sober, me. You're more likely to do it after a couple of drinks. And there's debates about, oh my God, I'm not reading all this. Okay. The only good thing that's said in this producer chat is Colin said, me now definitely punches hipster Matt, you know, back in the day. And, you know, like fantasy hipsters on NFL Network. I would definitely like to punch myself. That is the only human being I actually want to punch is like me. You know, a past self for several reasons. That's the only person you should ever actually want to hit is an annoying former version of yourself. But I don't punch a fan. I mean, if they're a fan of like the show or anything, I don't think either one of us are doing this, Boone. The real answer is I don't think either one of us do it.
Agreed. I would say, though, based on my current costume or the Grinch costume I was wearing at the beginning of the show, that would be the funniest visual of me doing it wearing this. That would be the funniest. But yeah, I don't think it would actually happen. So let's move on here. Got another listener question from @foosball. In a championship matchup, do you typically wait on injury news for ailing stars like Lamar Jackson, who could bottom out at any point, or go with the safer floor of someone on the wire, players like Sam Darnold, CJ Stroud, or Tyler Shuck are all available in my league? And I don't know right off the bat, like if this question involves a roster crunch. I don't know if it's necessarily like an either or, like do you need to drop Lamar Jackson in order to pick up one of these guys? Because I think the smartest move here would be pick up a backup, make sure you have someone on your roster. If Jackson can't play on Sunday, then you go with that player. And out of that group that you just mentioned there, I think Tyler Shuck is the guy that I would have ranked the highest this week. He's the one based on what we've seen recently. We talked about him as a waiver wire pickup on Monday's show. I think he's the one that I would go with if you have the luxury of waiting. If you need to make that decision when waivers process, that makes it a lot harder. But you need to consider all the factors. And in this league, if you're telling me that many players are available at quarterback, then you probably don't need to go pick one up right away. You could probably wait it out, hope that Lamar plays. And if not, it sounds like this isn't a league where everyone's stashing two or three quarterbacks and there's nothing to pick from on the waiver wire. It sounds like you're going to have options to pick somebody up there. I really wanted to answer this one, though, because I think it's kind of part of like a bigger question of how to approach these injury situations. And as always, it is case by case. We have to factor in everything that we're reading, all the news that's coming out, the specific injuries, you know, the confidence that we have that these players are going to go. And you can check my rankings all week long as I update them. I'm making these like educated guesses on who I think's going to play and not play. It's been quite fun with quarterback this week because there are a bunch of backups who might be going. And I think I'm already going to have to make some changes based on some of the news that's been trickling out, even since we started recording this show here. But I want to talk just about the idea of in a one-on-one matchup in the playoffs. And I don't know how you feel about this, Harmon, because this gets into like the strategy. And I think sometimes like a bit of like ethics, if you want to bring in that into the fantasy football space.
Boy.
But as long as it is within the rules of your league, the one thing that I think this person needs to be mindful of is your opponent in the final going to notice this Lamar Jackson situation? And are they going to go start grabbing quarterbacks and trying to play defense? Because I think that is something you could totally do, right? If I was this person's opponent, and let's say in a normal league, right, if you drop a player, they have to process through waivers. It normally takes like 2 days. So I'd be grabbing guys, trying to hold them. When you get to Friday, now you can drop that player and they can't be picked up again before Sunday. Or if the player's going on Thursday or on Saturday, 2 days before that game, you can now drop that player. Your opponent cannot pick them up. And just keep cycling that spot and trying to eat up as many waiver wire quarterbacks in this situation as possible in order to block your opponent from getting a chance to start these guys. Little shady, maybe, you know, not the best move on paper, but it's legal. And I will say, I have done it, Harmon. I have done it. I know people don't really maybe like that stuff, but it's a move, a defensive one, but it's a move that you can make when it comes to these injuries and how you can approach them, especially when you get to the fantasy championships and so much is on the line and you're trying to just prevent one opponent from getting these types of players.
Lot to unpack here. First of all, on the morality of this here, I will just say I am like the last person that's going to be the fantasy police at any point, almost in any situation here. I am not judge, jury of any of this nonsense. All right, look, here's a great example of this. I've talked about my mom's fantasy league on the show over the course of the last few years in her community down there in Florida, you know, the Treviso Babes. They started doing Superflex this year, and one member of the league essentially, and this is great when they can, because you know these ladies started playing football, fantasy football, like 3 years ago. So it can be the wild, wild west at some points. It's not nearly as entertaining as it used to be when they were just dropping players left and right back in the day. Andy and I used to talk about this a lot. It's not quite as entertaining as that anymore, but there's still some good wrinkles, including the fact that they did Superflex this year. And my mom, I think it was not too long ago, she basically raised the issue with me of, hey, one of the ladies in the league essentially has just decided that her strategy is to hoard every quarterback possible because they didn't quite realize that they needed to, you know, like they needed to have all the quarterbacks on their roster. One of the ladies did. And so she just made her whole bench like backup quarterbacks. And my mom's like, is that right? I was like, well, you know what? I don't know. Like, I'm not going to come in here as big government and tell you how to live your life. Okay. Like, your league is doing this. Somebody's done it. It is within the bounds. So to me, Boone, I think that's fair play. Okay. It's all about like, if you're going to do that, she's doing that, or you're doing things like that, you are going to sacrifice somewhere else, because if you're going to do all that nonsense, you're going to do all these waiver claims. What if just for whatever reason, one of your players, you know, is, you know, something happens to them, right? Slips on Trayvon Diggs got concussed trying to set up a freaking TV, you know, recently here, which obviously that sucks. What if one of your players trying to set up a big screen that they got on Christmas morning, boom, they're out on Sunday and you're now behind in the waiver order? Like things like that can happen. So there's always consequences and choices that you are making here. This is a game. This is a game, and it's a game of consequences. That's just one of the consequences here.
Yeah, I think I'm much less likely to do it. Like, I know that is a tactic some people employ in like Superflex and 2QB drafts where they go out and try to get all the quarterbacks, like you mentioned. That's one that I don't really want to do, because I think earlier in the season, you need the, there's so much value to having those bench spots and stashing those guys that might break out, that I think that ends up being like an actual negative move. Because also, if you think
I'm not saying it was a good idea.
Just explaining why I'm against that one. But I'm more for it when you get down to the fantasy playoffs, and especially the fantasy championship, and there's only two teams left, and you can specifically look at your opponent's roster and say, hey, they have George Kittle. We don't know if George Kittle is going to play, so I'm going to be the one to go get Taysom Hill. And sometimes it comes down to like, your budget, your waiver budget, right? Like, do you have more money than they have? Can you bid $1 more and you can get Taysom Hill off the waiver wire, Jake Tonjes or AJ Barner, like you mentioned earlier? Like, you can get some of these guys and block that Kittle manager from playing who you think is potentially the best matchup and the best player at that position. But earlier in the season, I think it's a mistake to do something like this. But at this point in the year, you are trying to find every little edge possible. And these injuries open up a potential area where you can block an opponent, where you can gain just a little tiny bit more, and it might work out in your favor. It might be meaningless, and you spend a bunch of time adding these players and doing all this, and then Lamar Jackson plays and has a big game, and who cares, and you did all of it for naught. But I still am willing to do this kind of stuff in a one-on-one matchup, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. And to this person who asked the question, you should be looking at your opponent's roster and doing the same. Don't just sit there like a victim and let them do that to you. Look and see if they got anybody that's injured.
Fight back, baby.
And you can get out there and try to use some of your bench spots to block them.
Just last point on this question before we move on, just a practical idea of Lamar Jackson this week. I think the interesting thing here is, you know, they mentioned ailing stars like Lamar who could bottom out at any point. Do you have any reservation? Let's say Lamar Jackson is active. He's playing. Do you have any reservation with the idea that it could be just, you know, we saw it like one hit, you know, it's a back injury that he's dealing with now, one hit, and then he's out for the game. And I'm saying this as somebody that has Lamar Jackson as my super flex quarterback, along with Drake May in a super flex fantasy championship this weekend. There is not a bunch of, you know, I wish CJ Stroud, I'd pray for Tyler Shuck to be available. Obviously they are not in this league. I'm looking at, like, do I blow the rest of the fab budget on Malik Willis, who may or may not even start in that very same game. So I'm hoping to maybe have some sort of backup plan. I don't know if I will. Quinn Ewers is on my bench. I don't know if I could stomach playing freaking Quinn Ewers over Lamar Jackson if Lamar Jackson is active. But do you have any hesitation with Lamar this weekend just because of the fact that, yeah, he might be out there, but one, how healthy is he? And two, it could be one hit and boom, it's like he gives you 5 points and he's out for the rest of the game.
I mean, that's always possible whenever a player's coming back from injury that they might aggravate something or they might take the wrong kind of shot and be out for the rest of the game. I think that's more a reason to, like, break ties against the player if you have two guys that are close. When you're talking about dropping, like, that far down the rankings to guys that are, like, low-end QB2s, if that, potentially, I think that's way too far down to go. And I even think a guy like Tyler Shuck, who we like and we think is arguably the best waiver wire pickup at quarterback this week, I just don't know that you could play him over Lamar. If Lamar's starting, yeah, the ceiling that he brings, even though there's more risk involved and you have to accept that, I think I would only bump him down a spot or two in the rankings. We're not talking about bumping him down 5-10 spots, something like that, unless we get new information as the week goes along. Because again, we're recording this early, so if news comes out of what he looks like in practice or potentially him not practicing at all, which we've seen in the past, then that could change things a little bit. But if he's out there, there's only a handful of guys that you'd be willing to consider over him because he is still Lamar Jackson and he still brings a ceiling that very few quarterbacks can offer in fantasy.
All right, let's get to the next one here. Really interesting one to break down this next question, the fifth question of the week.
Yeah, going back to one of the teams that played on Monday night there, the Colts. Could the Jags-Colts be a sneaky shootout? We talked about a couple games off the top there that could really blow up that I think are really important for fantasy this week. The 49ers and the Bears and the Rams and the Falcons have these really high projected point totals. You look at this game between the Jags and the Colts, and I think the odds makers took notice of what Phillip Rivers did and that he led his team to 27 points on Monday Night Football, because the game total for Jags-Colts, it rose a full point from Monday night when I checked it. It was 46.5 to now 47.5 a day later. And there's lots of reasons why this could be a potential shootout. Trevor Lawrence has been on fire. He just overcame that really tough matchup against the Broncos where we weren't sure, is he going to fall back to earth after he took advantage of some really easy opponents? Well, if he could do it to the Broncos like he did, he could do it to anybody. Tons of talent on the Jags side too, right? Travis Etienne, Jacoby Myers, Brian Thomas Jr., Parker Washington with the big game, Brenton Strange, all these guys healthy. There's been huge chunks of the season where these guys have been hurt or underperforming, or Jacoby Myers wasn't even on the team for a big part of the year. Now these guys are out there. They're healthy. You simply just can't stop all of them. I think Liam Cohen knows that. He's done an excellent job with this team, just building them up throughout the season to where they're now hitting their stride down the stretch. I'd be willing to start any of those guys on the Jags side that I just mentioned in my fantasy championship, and I would feel pretty good about doing it. And then for the Colts, and this might be the more interesting conversation, because they had that really tough matchup in Phillip Rivers' first game. They had to go against the Seahawks defense. I joked, like, is Rivers even going to survive that game against a really tough defense? He survived it, but only 120 yards. 120 yards coming off the couch against a tough defense, but still 120 yards in that one. This week, though, on Monday night, he looked a lot more in command. The Colts looked like they were more of a real offense in what was an easier matchup against the 49ers. I said earlier off the top, 277 and two touchdowns for Rivers in that game. He got Alec Pierce going, 86 yards, and he caught both TDs. Josh Downs seems a little bit rejuvenated, getting a little more work now. Five grabs for 65 yards on Monday night. You know, we saw these two teams square off recently, too. It was just back in week 14 when these two teams played. And, you know, that was the game where Daniel Jones got hurt and Riley Leonard came in. But they still had some success through the air. Alec Pierce, 5 for 80 in that one. Michael Pittman finished with 9 for 79. So I pose the question to you, Mr. Harmon. Could this be a sneaky shootout? But also, how are you valuing these Colts pass catchers now that we have two games worth of data with Phillip Rivers? What are you actually seeing here? And are you willing to play these guys with any confidence in the fantasy championship?
Oh, I don't even know if it's like a sneaky potential shootout. Number one, I mean, that Colts defense is in a tough, tough spot right now with the secondary injuries. And I expect Jacksonville to be able to take advantage of that. So I think the Colts will be in the same position that they were last night, where they're going to be trailing points behind a really good offense and they will have to take to the air. And like, let's again, look, well, okay. Before I go any further, I do also want to say, I said this on the solo recap that, you know, Joe Buck, I think it was, maybe Troy Aikman on the broadcast at the end of the game were kind of speculating whether that might be the last time we saw Rivers, because their playoff odds are so, so low. Might they just want to get a look at like Riley Leonard or something like that down the stretch? I've changed my tune for two different reasons on that I think now we probably will see Rivers. I think at least here in week 17, I think we'll see him start this game. Because one, Rivers said after the game, you know, I've been involved in situations where I've had less odds to go to the playoffs, and like we've come through. I don't know if that's actually true. I mean, the Athletics model literally gives them a 1% chance. However, if they win this weekend and the Chargers win this weekend, and then in week 18 they beat the Texans, they're up to it like a 50-50 chance, and then it depends on a lot of other crazy things that have to happen. But they're still technically alive, so I do think Rivers will want to play this weekend. He didn't come off the couch to just do two games and then peace out, I think. The other thing that's interesting about this too, you know, Greg Rosenthal, I saw the tweet from his podcast that they're, Greg and Ollie Conley were kind of on the show saying that Shane Steichen might be coaching for his job in these next two games. And I guess I hadn't really thought about that, but I mean, with the way that this season has gone and the fact that they went all in on this version of the team with Chris Ballard and these guys, that then essentially it blew up in their faces, that there is a chance that if they don't finish strong, and maybe it's already set in stone, if they just missed the playoffs, like this was already kind of a, hey, playoffs or bust type of season for this Colts staff. And I know obviously you can give, they were making the point, you can give asterisks and context and the whole deal, but still, you're going to end up missing the playoffs here. Will this new ownership, you know, it's Jim Irsay's daughter and those ladies, but like, will they not just say, hey, okay, it's just time to make a change. It's time to put our imprint on the team and go in a different direction. Very possible here. So I think it's just, they want to end the season on a high note is my sense of this. And with that in mind, if it's Rivers in this game and they're trying to have that high note here, I think that we're looking at this team here and you're looking at just the receivers the last two weeks. Josh Downs has run around 88% of the dropbacks, which is a huge improvement from where he was, because we can just be honest about this Colts offense with Rivers, even if it's a cool story and he is obviously playing at a extremely high level considering the context, it's a very limited offense. They're in the shotgun and they're spreading the field out a lot more than the previous version of the Colts were under Daniel Jones. And because of that, like Downs is in the mix here. Pierce is getting even more isolated routes because of the coverages that they're facing. So I'm actually comfortable playing any of these Colts receivers, you know, within context. Like I think Pierce was a guy that when I went and did my rankings this week, I immediately bumped him up a lot higher than he was in the consensus ranks. I think Pittman's in a, you know, wide receiver three range. And I think Downs is also in the wide receiver three range here as well. More so like in a PPR sense because of the role that he plays.
And producer Colin dropping in the notes here that Philip Rivers, not kidding, that the 2008 Chargers started 4-8 and one out to get into the playoffs. The playoff odds were as low as 13%. So he has lived it before in some sense.
Okay, it's maybe not 1%.
Down to 1%. Yeah, not down to 1%, but it was a long shot and they still made it happen. And yeah, he has that kind of personality. You also wonder too, like, I don't think this is the reason that he came back, but I know there were some people that speculated, like, just padding the stats a little bit for his Hall of Fame case and that it would have been a really tough class, you know, this time around. So maybe he wants to stay out there and, you know, have another couple of 200 and something yard games and bump it up a little more, throw a couple more touchdowns. Why not? But yeah, until they are officially eliminated, I think they roll with Rivers, and that probably involves Rivers playing this game and then Leonard playing in week 18.
Yeah, but are you kind of on the same page there in terms of the pass catcher rankings? Like, I do think, just kind of the way I outlined it there. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I think you did a good job with it there. And as long as Rivers is under center, I am a lot more excited in good matchups. And I think the Jags matchup for them is a fine one. And, you know, you said maybe not quite so sneaky, but the way that Vegas is looking at it and that projected point total, it's not anywhere near like some of the highest scoring games that are projected for this week.
Sure.
It's still a few points back of those. But I think this is one that could potentially shoot out and turn into a really fun game. And that's what we're trying to find, right? When you're getting into the fantasy championship, you're trying to figure out which games could surprise and who are the players in those games that could surprise. I think you did a really good job breaking it down there.
Yeah. And on the other side of it too, because of the way the Colts defense is at this point, there's a lot of appeal to basically every Jaguars player here. You know, again, within context of the position, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be a top seven quarterback for me. I think Brenton Strange is going to be a top 10 tight end for me. And then in the wide receiver room, Jakobi Meyers immediately goes back into the starting, you know, wide receiver two range. And I think Brian Thomas Jr. and Parker Washington are also on the radar as volatile wide receiver threes. I know that Brian Thomas Jr. obviously didn't have the good game last week. We talked about this, that if he ended up getting shadowed by Patrick Surtain, he was 100% going to have a dud game here. We just didn't know going into it, was he going to get Patrick Surtain or was he not? On the vast majority of plays, Patrick Surtain was covering Brian Thomas Jr. So guess what? Like, welcome to sacrificial X receiver zone. That was exactly what was going to happen to BTJ. It's exactly what did happen to him. But in this matchup where the Colts are still, they're still playing like they have Traverius Ward and Sauce Gardner in that secondary in terms of the man coverage and the, some of the things they're throwing out there, and they do not. So I actually think that Brian Thomas Jr. could be a, I don't want to call him a random week 17 hero, but one of these guys that he has a big play in this game. He scores a touchdown. I think that's very live for him.
When we look back at the week 14 game that I mentioned, BTJ 3-87, Tim Patrick 5-78-1, and Jakobi Meyers 4-39-1. So they had all three receivers being fantasy viable, and I definitely think we could see that again.
Yeah, I like all those guys in Jacksonville on this one. Okay, let's get to the final question here for the week.
Well, I'm putting you to work a little bit with this one. We're both going to throw out some names. And I thought this would be fitting because on my old show, I always used to end my weekly preview episodes asking which players are being undervalued for that week. So let's do it. Our final preview episode here, the main fantasy season. Which players are being undervalued heading into week 17? And I will start us off with the guy that I've talked about a bunch of times throughout this year. Tyron Tracy Jr. Let's not forget what he's done lately. I mean, I know last week that game, even in a game where the Vikings offense or the Vikings defense basically shut them down, right? They had the answer for them. They didn't get a lot going. Even in that game, Tracy still had 78 scrimmage yards. Before that, it was 97 and 2 TDs in week 15. They were on bye in week 14. He left early in week 13 with the injury. The two games before he left with that injury, 130 scrimmage yards in week 12, 139 scrimmage yards in week 11. So he's been producing. I don't know if everyone realizes because the injuries, because the really tough matchup last week, but now he gets the Raiders defense. They're the ninth easiest matchup for fantasy RBs. And before facing a banged up Texans backfield last week that the Raiders did, they'd given up at least 90 yards and a touchdown to three straight starting running backs. So Tracy, for me, is back in the fantasy RB2 mix. I think he is a really strong start, somebody that I'm excited to have in my lineup for the fantasy championship.
This game, how do you feel about this game? I don't know what the projected total is off the top of my head, but this is definitely one that I could see being one of those beautifully bad type shootouts.
Yeah, I totally do as well. And again, I think people are looking at it. People maybe aren't quite sure what to think about Jackson Dart. And you have this game where it's just the worst possible matchup for a rookie quarterback going against that Brian Flores defense. I think the Giants coaches knew how bad it was going to be. They were running the ball like crazy early because I don't even think they wanted to get him involved in that kind of, you know, mix and match game with Brian Flores. And yeah, it didn't turn out great for them. But now they come back around. This is a good spot. And we talked yesterday about how the Raiders could actually have a really good game here. This is the rare game where they're favored. They could come out and put up some big points here. So yeah, I definitely think this one could shoot out as well. This is maybe the true, like, very sneaky one that could potentially shoot out.
I love it. Okay, I'm going to get to my first undervalued player here. I'll go to the tight end position. I'll say Juwan Johnson, who is coming off one of his biggest games in a while here. I'm going back to that Saints well, baby. You know what? I've been hitting this hammer hard all season long, man. When it was the Spencer Rattler offense, I was on this show saying, hey, this Saints offense is better than you think. It's well-designed. Chris Olave, I love the way they're using him. And I guess I'm going to be the Tyler Shuck guy. I don't know what it is, but I just really enjoy the way he plays. I don't know what his long-term ceiling is. You know, Ryan Tannehill was a popular comp of his during draft season. Could he be a Ryan Tannehill type quarterback? I think that's very possible. Just really tough. Love the way he plays. Anyways, Juwan Johnson here. Again, biggest game in a minute. He had 9 targets, 8 catches, 89 yards against the Jets. Obviously, it was as cushy of a matchup as you could possibly imagine. That's, of course, we get that. The Jets stink. But I also think the important variable here is that he was kind of going quiet before that. Four straight games of under 50 yards receiving, 6 catches, 5 catches, 4 catches, 4 catches in those 4 straight games. But those directly overlapped with when they started getting Devon Vele involved in the mix here, because obviously Brandon Cooks was released, so they started playing Vele. And I think Vele was playing some pretty good football too. And obviously Vele's a wide receiver, but he kind of plays that power slot position a little bit in Kellen Moore's offense. So I think that they were essentially operating in the same areas of the field. You see this sometimes where certain teams, especially if they don't have like an elite quarterback, they can't get the power slot receiver and the tight end firing at the same time here. I think now with Vele out of the mix, Juwan Johnson becomes a very interesting tight end play here this week. You know, maybe you have to be kind of desperate to get all the way down there to Juwan Johnson. But, you know, if for whatever reason, it just the waiver wire is what it is, you don't have one of those good options, I do think that Juwan Johnson profiles to me as a guy that is a top 10 tight end on the week. And of course, really good matchup against the Tennessee Titans defense.
And I'm smiling the whole time here because before I looked at the notes, and you beat me to our show notes by putting him in there first, I just started jotting down some notes on him because I'm like, yeah, I'm going to talk about Juwan Johnson in this section. It was the first player thought of to talk about. And then I got there and I was like, oh, Harmon stole him from me. One thing I was going to mention, you said the Titans is a pretty good matchup. If you look at the Titans defense before they faced the Chiefs offense injuries and everything going on with the Chiefs last week, we're not going to count that one. But in the weeks before, 8 for 88 in a touchdown to Kittle in week 15, 8 for 114 in a touchdown to Harold Fannin Jr. in week 14, 45 yards in a touchdown to Brenton Strange in week 13. Johnson is a great pick. I think he's like a mid-range tight end one this week, certainly inside my top 10. I really think that's a great call. And because I looked ahead and saw who else you have in here, I really like your second call as well, but I want to throw out a running back before I give you the floor again here. Omarion Hampton versus the Texans. You will not hear me recommend a lot of fantasy players going against the Texans defense. And yes, I have concerns about that Texans front going against the Chargers banged up offensive line. There's a very low projected point total on this game at 39.5. I am not doing myself any favors yet here, But doesn't this sound like exactly what we were saying last week about Ashton Jeanty? And hey, don't play Ashton Jeanty. He's got this tough matchup. A rookie going again. The offensive line won't hold up. And the guy comes out and has 188 yards and two TDs. So why can't another talented rookie running back do the same? I'll add in that Kamani Vidal suffered a neck injury. Doesn't seem like he's going to play this week. I believe they signed Jared Patterson to the active roster, so I think that's a bit of a tell in terms of Vidal missing some time here. That's going to open up more touches for Hampton. He just had 95 yards and a touchdown versus the Cowboys. And if we really look at the Texans defense, even before the Jeanty game, they allowed at least 90 scrimmage yards or a touchdown to five straight starting running backs. Jeanty, Michael Carter, Kareem Hunt, Jonathan Taylor, and James Cook. They all accomplished that against them. So give me Hampton with an increased workload in what definitely appears to be a bad matchup. But I think he's going to come through on talent and on a little more volume because Vidal's out. I think he's looked really good here as he's gotten further removed from the injury, and I think he's going to look really good in this matchup, even though it's risky to make this call going against that Texans defense.
Well, they've been targeted by the running back position 80 times this season as the Houston Texans, and you see this sometimes. Like, the Seahawks are this way. They give up a bunch of catches to the running back because they're just getting the ball out against that pass rush. It happens here. And I do think, like, the loss of Kamani Vidal is a big deal here. Vidal was mostly taking, like, passing down snaps. He wasn't, as a protector, he wasn't really getting any usage there, but if that just increases Hampton's usage on passing downs a little bit more, he was a guy that before the injury they were kind of going to in some of the designed ways to get the ball out of to get the ball out of Herbert's hands quicker. So I actually like that call a lot by you as well. And even if it's just for the logic of, hey, it happened for Jeanty last week, why can't it happen for Amarian Hampton, who I think looks really good? Like, Hampton's a player I'm very excited to draft in 2026 here. He's going to be someone that I'm pretty in on. In that respect, I'll go to the last player here in this segment. And I want to mention, too, that you said I got in the outline first. I took Juwan Johnson and this player maybe potentially as well. I honestly was planning when I saw this, like, ooh, Brian Thomas Jr., a lot of Jags players. And then I realized, like, oh, we're talking about them in the segment before. That would be stupid. So in reality here, you kind of took my first answer. I had to go to these fallback answers. But my next one is Ramondre Stevenson, who, look, this is boring, simplistic analysis, but anytime you can start a running back who's going to start for a team that's projected to score 27, 28 points, you do it. When that running back, his team is set to face a defense that's allowed the fifth most rushing yards since week 12 to the position and a league high 8 receiving touchdowns to the position on the year, even more of a reason. When that player, despite getting a bunch of vitriol from the fantasy community, because he was blocking a younger, more talented player, when that player is still a proven quality NFL back, it's another piece of the puzzle, baby. All those boxes are being checked this week by Patriots running back Ramondre Stevenson going against the New York Jets in week 17 with Travion Henderson likely to miss the game in concussion protocol. Obviously you got to monitor that, of course, but if there's no Travion Henderson, I'm going to be putting Ramondre Stevenson, what, like top 14, top 15? Pretty easy.
Say,
top 15
top
back.
15, yeah, once we know for sure that Henderson's out, yeah, I think top 15 pretty solidly. I mentioned the stat yesterday, I believe. The Jets have allowed 14 touchdowns to running backs in their last six games. So pretty good shot to find the end zone here if you're the starting running back against them. I love this call. I think Stevenson is the perfect kind of play here where he's had a decent season, especially early in the year when he was getting more work. I think he's very underrated as a running back, and now he's going to get an opportunity to be that fantasy hero in the championship week, and I think he's going to come through.
You know how much of a coward I am, and why I would never have the ability, the fearlessness to punch a fan. You know, I this is how much of a coward I am. One of my teams that just got eliminated last week has Derrick Henry, Kyren Williams, Travis Etienne, and Ramondre Stevenson on it, and you can only start three running backs. And I was looking at my running back rankings this morning, and I think I have all of those guys so bunched up together. And my first thought was not, oh man, if only I'd made it to week 17. My thought was, thank God I didn't make it to this week. I don't have to make the decision of which player to bench, because I knew nice. I would get it wrong. That's how much of a coward I am. So that's some self-reflection here by me. Oh man, how pathetic.
Incredible.
All right, let's take
incredible.
Let's take another quick break, mercifully, and then we'll get back into the fantasy film room here. We'll talk some wide receivers. We'll do that on the other side of this break. All right, we're back, and welcome to the Fantasy Film Room presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season with another year of Toyota Game Day giveaways. From NFL shop gear to even Brock Purdy's favorite Sequoia, Toyota is giving fans a chance to win big. Visit toyota.com/NFL to learn more. For today's film room, we're going to dive into some wide receivers I really like for some film football nerd reasons here in week 17. And I tried to pick three guys that are all, I'll be honest here. I didn't want to go too crazy deep. I didn't want to be like, oh man, yeah, Josh Downs, they're spreading the, you know, Jalen Coker. Yeah, no. I want to be a little practical here. I want to try to stick inside the actual top, kind of at least my top 25 ranked players. But I did go sort of by range here in descending order. So the first player I want to highlight is Eagles wide receiver DeVonta Smith. And we talked about this game a little bit earlier as potentially a ugly football game, a little bit sloppy. But one thing I wanted to highlight about this Eagles passing game is that when we think about the Eagles, when they have their ceiling type games, it's usually against defenses that play a lot of man coverage. They use that single high safety. Jalen Hurts is able to push the ball to the perimeter of the field. They don't often take the whole shots over the middle against cover two, you know, some of the quarters structures, things like that. That's not really how this Eagles offense typically has their ceiling games. Well, this Bills defense is basically the antithesis of that. No matter what, they're pretty much playing a lot of zone. They're playing a lot of two high safeties. I believe they play the most two high safeties in the NFL right now. It's either them they're actually a little bit less this year in terms of how often they're using two high safeties. But when they are in two high, they're getting a little bit shredded this year. I believe they're top five in points per drop back allowed. So that's been problematic. And again, when you get into those looks, that's not really where A.J. Brown has his big games. Now, again, I'm not saying bench A.J. Brown or anything like that, but that's when you look at the games that A.J. Brown has had his big performances, it has been against teams that get shredded in those single high situations. That's not this Bills defense. And if you just look at the production in terms of when there's two high safeties on the field, DeVonta Smith leads the team in catches. He catches 72% of his passes. So again, I don't know if this is a ceiling game for DeVonta Smith, but I really like him to catch a lot of passes in this one. I'd see him getting like 6 to 8 catches kind of as a medium projection in this one.
I hope you're right. It'd be nice to see him get hot here down the final stretch, because he's been kind of cold lately, and he's a streaky player, no doubt. Like, he has these bouts, and some of that is just because he's playing on a team. You talked earlier about guys that end up on depth charts behind other players, and he's somebody that has ended up behind a really good receiver, and I think that leads him to be a little more of a streaky fantasy asset. He did find the end zone last week. That was the first time that he scored since week 10, though. He's been held under 50 yards in 4 straight games. Under 10 fantasy points in 4 of his last 6 as well. So we've been in a bit of a slump here for him. But Buffalo also, you look at the Bills, for everything you said about them, they've only let one wide receiver go over 55 yards against them in their last 5 games. You add the weather into the mix. I know you acknowledged it. I don't want to, like, you know, just dump on this completely, like the snow might in Buffalo on Sunday, but I don't feel good about this being a ceiling game for anybody in that passing attack. I'm a little bit concerned for him here, but it's good to know that this is a spot where he could potentially actually outperform A.J. Brown in this one against that Bills defense.
Yeah, that's sort of where my mind was at here. It's less about, like, do I think DeVonta Smith is going to have this monstrous game? Like, I still have him ranked, you know, outside my top 15 wide receivers. And definitely the weather could be something that ruins this prediction entirely. But I think if we remove the weather aspect from it, just structurally, Smith, the way he is used in this offense. And I think this is, I don't want to go on a big rant about this, about the coverage data stuff, because nobody cares about my thoughts on this. But sometimes I think it's less about, oh, this guy averages this, that, and the other. And I quote those stats sometimes, because I think when it helps paint the story, like, oh, he does this production-wise, yards per out, targets per out against this coverage. Sometimes it really is just, to me, you only need a couple of plays, right, if you're hitting that ceiling, and you just want to think about an offense's structure and like which role the receiver plays in there. Like sometimes it is just, oh, this type of coverage and this structure, your first read is going to be that X receiver, you know? And so again, typically when we're thinking about these defenses like Buffalo that plays a lot of deep safeties, you're going to get stuff underneath to the slot player in the offense. And over the last, you know, two seasons and, you know, since recent history for sure, it's still AJ Brown, strict perimeter receiver. Devontae Smith is mostly the guy that is playing on the inside there. So that's what kind of led me to think that if I'm picking Eagles receivers this week, I'm still probably going to have AJ Brown ranked higher because he, without question, has the higher ceiling. He's playing so much better now than he was at the beginning of the year. But I think Devontae Smith is in a pretty good spot here. I'll get to my next one. And this one I feel actually much better about. It's Jalen Waddle here this week. And look, I know it's Quinn Ewers. I get it. To me, Boone, I just like didn't really see a big difference in the Dolphins offense with Quinn Ewers under center. You know, I mean, did you find anything like compelling?
It was a very low bar. It was a very low bar. It was an easy act to follow for him. Yes, it couldn't get much worse than it looked with Tua. It wasn't great by any means, but I don't know that it was that much worse with Ewers out there. Agreed.
That's what I'm saying here. You could certainly find situations where, oh man, Quinn Ewers was in there and it's just, well, you kind of wish that it was Tua because he at least keeps the train on the tracks and all that stuff, whatever. I didn't see that. I think Ewers was at least functional. I thought he, you know, got the job done. He had a couple turnovers. Tua led the NFL in interceptions, you know, when he was playing. So just to me, it's like that. There's no big difference there. And I thought Jalen Waddle actually having a functional game here was a good sign. Obviously, usually you get your number one receiver taken away, and there were injury situations there for the Bengals that are worth acknowledging. But regardless, I think Jalen Waddle still having a useful game, not like a crazy big production or anything like that, but a useful game with Quinn Ewers in his first start was a good sign. And then you look at this matchup this week. I mean, as much as we're all, I think, rightfully wringing our hands about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense, that defense still has a lot of problems. They do not get pressure. And that obviously, if you're going to be able to hang back in the pocket and get the ball out to your first read, that first read is going to be Jalen Waddle on a wide variety of these concepts for Miami. And Tampa Bay gives up the second most points per drop back in single high coverage, only second to Washington, who is just getting fried at a whole different level in terms of what they're allowing in single high coverage. And Jalen Waddle this year has been outside on over 80% of his snaps. So I actually think, the more I'm looking at it, I like Jalen Waddle actually more than Devontae Smith this week. He's someone I'm going to be pretty high on relative to consensus this week.
I agree with you. I'm glad you made the point that it was just nice to see him have like a usable fantasy day, even though it wasn't a big performance. 5 for 72 is certainly a usable fantasy day, especially when you consider like he's been under 10 fantasy points in 4 of his last 5 games. So might not be on a lot of playoff rosters, a lot of championship rosters here, but good news for him to be able to continue to produce. And it wasn't like going in the opposite direction. And yeah, that Bucs defense, especially the secondary, they've dealt with some injuries, but we just saw like Teddarrell McMillan, 73 and a TD against them this week. I think that's totally within the wheelhouse for Jalen Waddle to have a game like that in this one. So yeah, I'm not out on him by any means. And I agree with you that it hasn't been a great year for the Dolphins offense as a whole, especially for that passing attack. And we can blame some injuries. You know, they don't have Tyreek Hill and stuff, but still, Waddle has a chance to finish strong based on the matchup and based on the fact that, yeah, not that much has changed, really, no matter who. At least it's not Zach Wilson under center. Hopefully they don't go to him.
I don't think that we have to worry about that. Okay, my last one here is DJ Moore, who we talked about earlier. And I'm assuming here that Luther Burden is not playing in this game when I give out this sort of selection, this advice for this week. And the reason for me, this kind of goes back to the point I was making earlier where, you know, there's been this conversation about what's wrong with DJ Moore, like what's going on with DJ Moore. And I do think there's real criticism to the fact that he just doesn't fit in this offense for a couple different reasons. And maybe the role that he is in is not conducive to getting a lot of targets. And that's the thing. Like, he hasn't really seen his role, his usage, his, you know, route kind of diet change in the last 2 weeks with Roma Dunze out there. Nothing's really changed about his deployment. He's just getting more opportunities, and the opportunities that he gets because of the role that he plays on this team as the most most outside receiver. Like, he takes the most snaps outside relative to everyone else in the room. He gets the most kind of deep down the field targets. When those targets hit, they're going to hit big. Like we saw against the Packers this past week, the post route touchdown out of multiple tight end set there. I think we could see that again here against San Francisco, who since week 11 gives up to receivers lined up out wide the 12th most air yards per target. Not a crazy number or anything, but certainly I think Robert Saleh has this defense playing aggressively and playing above its head, but still you can get them on some deeper passes. We obviously saw Alec Pierce last night. What was it? Two post route looking touchdowns. At least that was what it looked like on the broadcast, a couple post routes. That's exactly how DJ Moore scored his touchdown on Saturday night against the Green Bay Packers. So I feel like DJ Moore, I have him the lowest ranked of this group, but he's going to be right at the top of that wide receiver three sort of boom bust range. And if you have him, I think you can risk the boom bust nature of his sort of role in this Bears offense this week.
I feel like we could see another boom week, to be honest. I'm going to have him probably rank the highest of this group, which surprises me.
Wow,
I'll go back into the lab a little bit, because as I always say, anytime you're making a recommendation, it's going to make me, you know, think about my choice and how I have it projected. But back-to-back top seven fantasy weeks here, and this matchup with the 49ers, just to me, it's not that scary, right? Like, we saw them be able to get thrown all over. We've seen that this year. They've basically been a defense where you want to throw the ball against them. You want to put the ball in the air. Phillip Rivers was able to do it. I think Caleb Williams will be able to do it. And yeah, I think DJ, and I am assuming that Burton is going to be out as well. So that could change as the week goes along. But assuming that he is out, I think DJ Moore is somebody that I'm very excited to play this week. More as like a wide receiver two than a wide receiver three, to be honest. And maybe I'm buying in too much of the recent production, but I think this is another spot, given the matchup, where he could certainly come through with a big performance again.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you should buy into the recent production, because, like I said, I still think DJ is a good player. He just doesn't really fit this offense, but the way that they're using him is, it's always been akin to these big downfield plays. And guess what? He's hit on the big downfield plays lately because he's the only healthy wide receiver. Like, it really is that simple sometimes. Like, what was going on with him in the first part of the season? There were two guys who, I think, younger players who were nipping on his heels, and now those guys aren't there. And you know, Olamide Zaccheaus is not going to be that guy. So just DJ is going to get the opportunities. I think recalibrating after having this discussion with you, I think that I'd actually probably say that Jalen Waddle's the player I'm going to, I think, rank the highest. Because I feel just the best about his median case outcome. I think DJ Moore has the highest ceiling. I think Devontae Smith probably doesn't have the ceiling of the other two guys, but I actually feel just really good about his floor in this matchup. So sort of you can take those kind of pieces of context, those adjustments, and decide what fits best into your lineups out there. Okay, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up with the hurry up offense. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. It's time. The segment that has swept the nation this season. It's the hurry up offense. This is where we put 40 seconds on the clock, rapid fire questions to finish up our preview show every single week. Welcome to the hurry up offense. All right, Boone, get us started as always.
Yeah, we're going a little festive with my first couple here. If you could ask Santa to bring you a fantasy gift this week, which player would you ask him to help have the biggest fantasy performance?
I would ask him to give Michael Wilson a big fantasy performance, regardless of Marvin Harrison Jr.'s status. Because here's the deal. That team that I said that had Marvin Harrison and I needed to start him, as you could guess, it was eliminated in the fantasy semifinal. So I no longer need Marvin Harrison's contributions here. I only need Michael Wilson, who is in one of, at least I'm considering and will likely be in one of my lineups this weekend. So yeah, easy. Give me a Michael Wilson, you know, vintage Michael Wilson end of season performance here for one of my fantasy football championships. I'll go for my first one here. Who are you worried that you're going to have to start? You're worried is going to cost you a championship this week.
Cost me honestly, like Josh Allen, like that I mean I watched him cost me so many matchups last week. I'm genuinely worried that we are not going to see big point totals from that game. And I just mean that all season long, he's been a player that has helped lead me to wins. And now I think these last 2 weeks, not like last week and this upcoming week, he's turning into just a contributor on my fantasy teams. Not somebody that's going to have that 30-point game and get me over the top, but the guy that's going to be more of a regular quarterback and give me 18 to 20 points, which puts more pressure on the rest of my squad to come through with the win. So yeah, it is Josh Allen, given the weather, given the matchup this week. If you could ask the Grinch, now we're going the opposite way with it. If you could ask the Grinch to steal away one player's fantasy potential for week 17, who would that be? And we will bring up the Grinch here while you make the answer to this one.
I mean, I guess because I've got a suspicious amount of Amon-Ra St. Brown teams, and obviously he's a Christmas player. We haven't discussed Christmas games, but he would be the player. I need Jameson Williams to get some Grinchiness here this week. So yeah, I'll say Jameson Williams gets Grinched this week. Okay, I think this is all we have time for. This is the last one here. So Justin Boone, would you rather? You have to become the Grinch in real life for the rest of your life. Wow. You're forced to live the rest of your life as the Grinch up in solitude in the mountains of Whoville, Mount Crumpet. But here's the twist. You will never be accepted by the Whos. You never have a redemption moment. You never, your heart doesn't grow back, you know, okay. Whatever. Also, no Max. No, Max. Max doesn't exist here. You are in complete solitude. You spend the rest of your life eating glass. You're eating onions, bad onions, by the way, other people's garbage. That is the rest of your life. No redemption moments up in solitude, wasting away until you are dead in the dirt as the Green Grinch, or finish last in the rankings contest.
I will answer by doing this, Harmon. I am going full Grinch. We are going back to the Grinch. I am not finishing last. There we go. Merry Christmas all.
Somebody tell your wife that you just picked this. Somebody tell you. That you just forsaked your entire life to live out the rest of your days as the mean old unredeemable Grinch just for a rankings contest. This guy is dedicated to his work above all else.
Whenever it's a scenario where I can make the best of it, I will choose that scenario over finishing last, and I will make the best of being the Grinch.
Let's remember that the one of the few things you thought you could not make the best of was the shrinking sized shoes. I still think that might be the only thing that I've gotten you on was the shoes shrunk every day. So it's just minor inconveniences for Justin Boone are way bigger than living out the rest of his life in misery as the Grinch eating glass. So that is how dedicated this guy is to his fantasy rankings. So make sure you're tuned into those the rest of the week. As Justin Boone helps you for your fantasy football championships. Boone, appreciate you, buddy. Glad we did this to you, the Grinch, to all the people. Merry Christmas out there. Hope you have a happy holiday. Hope you all out there have a happy holiday and all of your fantasy football dreams come true. That is going to do it for this show. However, we will be back on Sunday. So long layoff till you're going to hear us again, but I think you'll be able to survive. You guys got plenty going on here, but we'll be back on Sunday to recap Fantasy Football Championship Sunday. So when Bills and Eagles, this game that Justin Boone has, I don't know, cursed, maybe, you know, did some Bills reverse jinxing here, fear mongering, whatever you want to call it, a lot going on with this game. When that game hits triple zeros, join Chris Allen and I right here on Sunday to recap all of it live on YouTube. Until then, we are out.